If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the love and light of the Most Radiant One. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. This evening, our seminar topic is, what are you rehearsing? So let's take a deep breath and call yourself forward into your true divine self. Take a deep breath and breathe it in. There are overlays of omnipotent power, omnipotent glory, omnipotent ever-expanding awareness, and unlimited love that you have access to as who and what you are eternally. And all you need to do is call it forth and take a deep breath and breathe in the breath of the all that is. And with it, ride that divine awareness down into your physical body, your mind, your emotions, and flood the cells, the very DNA of your presentation, multi-dimensionally and into time and space. And be present as the loving that you are. How would your life be different if you but knew that the only thing you're here to do is be the love you are? How would your life be different, beloved? If you knew that only love mattered, that love is the entire curriculum for your interactions in time and space, and this great cosmic drama, that God is disporting himself, herself, itself, in and as everything that exists in creation. How would your life be different if you really got it? That you're a divine being, having a temporary role play, a temporary strut upon the stage of life. What if you but knew that you're simply enacting dreams? What if you but knew that this world is just a stage of play within your mind? You are but an actor within the play divine. So act your part with grace, but keep your gaze upon his face. What is that face? Well, we use the Christ as the image that represents the perfection of God's love. If you understand that every form in time and space is but a symbol for immortal love, then you will simply look past everything else and ignore it and go directly to the heart of the loving, which is the truth inherent, and but thinly veiled by our personas and our individualized presentations and forms. If I could say one thing to you that would be the quintessential truth, I would say this: as you walk through your life, use this as your guideline. If there's no loving in it, there's no truth to it. Again, if there's no loving in it, there's no truth to it. So you can discard it, diss it, distance yourself from any involvement with it. Love is truth, and truth is love. And without love, there is no godness or goodness in that particular presentation. So you needn't bother yourself with reciting the lines of that drama. So what drama are you enacting in your life? What are the lines of the script that you rehearse each day as you interact your role in life? And exchange dialogue with your fellow actors. You know, this lifetime is our watch, our strut upon the stage for this particular portion of history. But also be aware that you have appeared in every portion of history. Every time you picked up a historical account of some nation or some group of people or some culture or some ideology, say to yourself, that also am I. Tatwamasi, that also am I. You have played every single part, from the villain to the saint, in every historical period. Yes. So you but see yourself wherever you look. And the things that irk you in the world scenarios are pointing to where you still have unfinished business that has to be dealt with. What is the unfinished business that when you see it represented by a nation or an individual or a group of people or an ideology, what is it that bugs you, that irritates you, that gets your goat? Ah, beloved, that's the part within yourself you have not yet forgiven. So everything you see that gets your goat and irritates you and bugs you and pushes your reactive triggers of negativity, forgive yourself for that. Oh, I know it looks like another person. It looks like somebody else's thing to deal with, doesn't it? Well, that's called Maya, illusion, ego projection. You only see yourself wherever you look. The world is a mirror to your own consciousness. Now, the good news is you are not your limited self. You are not the rehearsing of limitation. You are not the rehearsing of failure. You are the very glory and image of a uniquely begotten, divinely breathed and empowered, eternal portion of God. An extension of God, not a fragment of it, an extension. Like the wave is the extension of the ocean. It arises for a second to glisten in the sunlight, and then dissolves back into the wholeness that it's forever part of. In like manner, beloved, you arise within the dream of time and space and becomingness, simply to, again, rest in God. As a planet rests in space, as a leaf borne upon the wind, rest like that in God. If you become too captivated with what you see from the frontal orifices in your head that you call eyes, you will become distracted because nothing that you see from your human worldview has any eternal significance. True seeing is when you see truly through the vision of the light that you are. When the light of heaven pours through your eyes, only then do you see clearly. So tonight we're going to look at the world's views, the lens through which we perceive and interpret. I was laughing, and you know, I was thinking earlier, I think, you know, if you're a doctor, then you get to hear organ recitals all day long. If you're a counselor or a psychologist, you get to hear the melodramas And if you're a member of the clergy, you get to hear the litany of sins and woes and guilts that we all gather and heap upon ourselves. Do you know, beloved, that's what keeps you from seeing clearly. It's your organ recitals. When you identify yourself with your body and its aches and pains and diseases and your aging and all the stuff that bodies do. Do you know a body is a little dark cloud that floats around the periphery of your radiance and immortal self? You've never, ever been a body. It's interesting. Jesus said that we have done everything but one thing, which if we would do that, it would take care of everything else. What is that one thing we have never done? Jesus said, we have never utterly forgotten that we are not a body, that we are a body. We have never, ever forgotten the body. That's how he said it. We've done everything, but we've never forgotten the body. If you stop to think about it, everything that we're concerned about in our life here on this planet revolves around the belief that we're a body. A body that is subject to death, disease, change, disaster, catastrophe, radioactivity, whatever, whatever. Think about it. Everything we do is to provide for the body. St. Paul said in the Bible, which I think was interesting, that those of us, it was Jesus who said that those who try to save their life will lose their life. But those who give their life, lose their life, in other words, for his sake, will receive a crown of life and immortal life in the worlds to come. So what we try to preserve and take care of by the very fact that it's a fiction, it's a falsehood, at some point must die, must dissolve, must disappear, must walk off into the wings of the stage of life and be heard from no more. What is that ephemeral thing? It's what we think of as ourself, our body. Have you ever had an experience where you became aware of yourself apart from your body? If you're a meditator, you have. It's called samadhi. When you merge into that which is eternal and supremely free and blissful and has nothing to do with your body. In fact, often when you go into that state of samadhi, when you try to go back into your body's like a numb, inert bunch of clay. It's totally numb. I've experienced where I've been so completely into the higher levels of consciousness that my body feels totally numb. I have no sensation in it whatsoever until I reintegrate back into it. Boy, you know that you're not the physical body when you've had some of these transcendental experiences. That's the purpose of meditation, to awaken yourself to who you are beyond the body, beyond the fiction of who and what you think you're all about. Your belief systems, your religions, your cultural valences, all of that stuff is left behind when you're in your true self. That's why you're called that which is unconditioned awareness itself. The conditioning is the drama that you rehearse. Do you know you can depart that drama anytime you really want to? Yeah. We have the drama in place because we think we're getting something out of it of value. The day we awaken to realize the only thing that has value here is who you are, as God created you to be, an expression of his love. That's it. You make God visible in time and space through the human form. That's all. That's your whole function here. So your worldview is your interpretive filter. It's the lens through which you perceive yourself. Now there's two major worldviews which govern a person's entire behavior and overall response to life and others. The first one is predominantly ego-motivated. Ego-motivated behavior always sees the world and others as separate, and their life situations as being totally unrelated to themselves. It's the ego that says, well, that's their problem, it's not mine. It's their fault, it's not mine. I didn't have anything to do with it. It's theirs to handle. That's the way the ego acts. I. But not the real I. The little I. The mini-me. So the ego mind and your lower mind, the separative human, the ego's cleverness is the embodiment of your lower mind. Projects a false sense of self and a flawed world. Because when you're truly seeing, you see only the wholeness and the holiness, the divinity of all things, when you're seeing through truth, truth and love being one. So the ego mind will always ascribe the blame outside of itself, always. That's all you can tell when the ego is presenting its lies into your mind or into the drama that's being unfolding around you, is that it's always pointing outside of itself to the enemy, the it, the them, the whoever that is the victimizer. So it is always the ego that criticizes, condemns, judges, attacks, and points those fingers of blame and accusation. The ego will feign and appear to be caring and positive, but only when it is being personally benefited in some manner. That pseudo saccharine appearance of love, that artificial sweetness, will immediately turn into gall and bitterness when you do not please the ego. It's called divorce. It's called alienation and hatred and vengeance and getting even. All behaviors of the ego. So the ego is incapable of true benevolence because the ego is the false self. You have never been an ego. You are not an ego. You should never, ever, ever identify yourself with the ego. See it as something very foreign to your nature. See it as like a fever that comes upon your mind that only the coolness of the name of the Lord will dissolve. That's why we repeat mantra. Mantra, the name of the God, is like a little Pac-Man that eats up the negativity of the falsehood that runs around in your mind. Has negative stinking thinking. Yeah, think of the name of God, your mantra, your initiatory tone. Think of it as a little Pac-Man gobbling up all the guck and misidentification and falsehood and yucky things that floats around in your mind like so much junk in your trunk. Just set those little divine Pac-Man free to gobble up all of that negativity. And that's the power of the name of God. Whatever you dedicate to God is immediately rendered pure. So dedicate every action to God. Don't live your lives at random. Take responsibility before you even get out of bed in the morning to offering your day to God, recognizing that it is only the divine that gives you life, that speaks through you, sees through you, acts through you. Let only the Christ live in you. Don't even give any wiggle room for anything less than the love of God to inhabit your holy tabernacle of your life. You are the habitation of God. You're the church of God, the church of Christ. Not a building, not a bunch of people that gather together and listen to someone preach every Sunday. That's not a church. You are the church of Christ, of God, the temple of Krishna, or whoever else you want to name. There's only one God. But the manifestations of the names and forms of God include every name and every form, including your own beloved. Your name is another name of God. Your form is another manifestation of the one that is. So, beloved, the ego's saccharine benevolence is never truth. It's never truth. Everything that comes out of the ego is distortion, designed to distract you from the awareness of who you truly are. So, again, know that you are not the ego. The ego is a false sense of self, which takes the form of the belief in separation from all good or God. It is the ego that keeps you impoverished. Yes, the sense of limitation, when you identify with that, is never supported by truth. Truth will never stand in the place of falsehood and support it in any way. So when you're working an ego karma drama out there in the world, the first sign of it is that you're impoverished. You don't have support in the flourishing of self. So the health becomes less, the physical support in the world in the form of the flow of good things into your life, which could be material, not necessarily, because many people live very simply with very little, and they're in a state of divine richness. But the sense of poverty itself goes hand in hand with ignorance of who you are as an emanation and child of the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, a spiritual royalty. So self-esteem and everything that would present a worthwhileness into the world is dependent upon you presenting your truth of who you truly are, and then the very universe rushes to rearrange itself to accommodate whatever it is you need. That's the real secret. Not trying to manipulate things through your mental body and your emotional body, but being your true, authentic self. Virtue is always its own support, or as it says in the Vedas, Dharma is its own support. It stands solidly on four legs of truth and peace and love and nonviolence, which is a life of righteousness, or Dharma. And that is its own support. And when you allow these things to carry you in your presentation through life, everything comes to you through grace, and you don't even have to think about it. Before you even have a need, the universe is rearranging the situation to your favor. What is the universe? The body of God. We live and move and have our being in God. There's no impersonal anything out there, except perhaps the law of karma. Because when God created everything and imbued everything with a portion of himself, herself, itself, because we're talking about love that has no gender, and no body, but is a spirit. When God did that, certain laws within the lower world were set into automatic mode. And one of those laws that's totally impersonal and automatic is the law of reciprocity, or karma, which means action-reaction. Whatever you give out and do to others in exact measure, to the exact degree, and in the same likeness, that same thing will return to you. That is why the giving and the receiving, spiritually regarded, are one and the same action. You can't possibly give love without receiving love. You can't possibly be a blessing without receiving a blessing. You can't possibly do anything to help another that you're not at the same time receiving that backwash of help where you need it. These are principles that govern life here. And the sooner you understand how things work, the sooner you can make the choice for grace. Grace delivers you and sets you free from the law. There are two major forms of grace that I have spoken about repeatedly in these seminars. The first one is to receive the grace in the Christian worldview, which would be to receive salvation through the cross of Jesus Christ and his finished work upon the cross, which purchased you completely from darkness and gave you righteousness in the sight of God by the righteousness of Christ, which then becomes your own. So in a sense, he is your high self standing in its original divine glory. And in that state, there's nothing you have to do but receive it as a gift. Grace is that unmerited favor that comes simply because what and who you are. The other way is more of the Vedic Eastern way, which is to realize there is only one divine spirit, and that is the divine actor that is acting through you. And you of yourself are not doing anything at all. You're simply a vehicle and an instrument through which the one Atma, the one spirit, is expressing. And then the step way into that worldview is to devote and consecrate all actions to God and not to try to receive the fruit of your actions. Let God decide where that goes and how it comes to you. So there you have the Eastern worldview, surrender at the feet of the Lord. And you have the Christian worldview, which is to take upon yourself the gift that Christ purchased for you when he went to the cross and defeated death and resurrected his body into immortal life, which was true. Death is the ego's nightmare. The resurrection is the truth of the immortal love of God, which could never be killed. See how that works? So whether you go by the Eastern way or the Western way, they both lead to awakening to the love that you are. So whatever thorn you take to remove the thorn, as long as the thorn is removed, what difference does it make? And every spiritual path is like a thorn to remove that splinter that is in our eye that causes us not to be able to see clearly. So when you're in your divinely motivated behavior, so we have the ego's worldview, we have, and that's a false view. Then we have the divinely motivated worldview and the behavior that comes from being rightly motivated in your life. And your divinely motivated behavior is always an expression of loving. always. And that loving will express as compassion, as active goodwill, as just a benevolent sense of self as you interact and move about in the world. You have a kindliness that just is your nature. So you are forever divine, and nothing that you do in this dream of time and space and becoming can ever take that divinity away. You need to go into the Eastern teachings to really understand that, because it's not usually taught under the Christian teachings. It's in the Bible, but very few pastors really get it, because many pastors read from the Bible and quote the Bible, but they haven't done the spiritual practice and the meditation which has enabled them to transcend identifying with their body. Plus, if you think you only have one lifetime here and that's it, you know, it's either make it or you don't. God help you if you have a short life. You know, you don't have a real understanding of how life operates, which is continual opportunity. Doesn't matter how many times you think you fail, you inevitably will awaken whole and complete as God created you in God, realizing you never left home. That's the happiest thing, is to realize that all of this negativity, this horrible stuff that seems to be happening in the world, it's all a big fiction. It's all a big nightmare from which we will awaken. Thank God. I often say, thank God this is not real. Well, it's experientially real. I mean, we think a dream when we're dreaming at night is real, don't we? And aren't we relieved when we awaken and we've had a really bad dream, really, you know, whatever is coming down, and we awaken, it's like, oh, I'm in my own bed, I'm at home, I'm safe, everything's fine. You know, your mother used to come in when you'd have a bad dream and maybe just gently stroke your hair and maybe just softly say, honey, wake up, mommy's here, everything's all right. Maybe mommy would turn on the light, maybe mommy would sing. But mommy wouldn't come in shouting and screaming, wake up, you're having a bad dream. And likewise, the Holy Spirit doesn't shout at you to wake up when you're in the middle of a nightmare. But it begins to visit you in a happy dream. And the happy dream is when you experience love from your fellow brothers and sisters coming around you to help you in very human ways. And gradually, God's love reaches you through many, many hands and people who reach out to help you when you need that. And gradually, you begin to walk a spiritual path, which is like a happy dream. You don't need any path to awaken to God, but you think you do because you believe that you're separate from God. You believe somehow God is someplace that you're not, and you have to do something to get to him or her or it. And it's your belief that causes you to think you have to walk a spiritual path or do certain things to get back to God. But the truth is, you've never left God. So you're only working within mindsets and worldviews that you have drawn and appropriated to yourself for probably good enough reasons. So don't make yourself wrong for doing that. But the point I'm making is that your returning to God is a happy dream. Your life as a devotee of the Lord. Your life as a born-again, spirit-filled Christian. Your life as a devotee of the Baba, or as a votary of John Roger, learning soul travel, whatever your spiritual path is, it is a happy dream because it makes you very happy. The happiest years, I think, of my life is my early years as a Sai Baba devotee. Oh my gosh, that's a sweet, sweet dream when you believe that Swami is just guiding you and and is always with you and is walking with you, and you're singing bhajans and with other devotees. And also very, very happy life I've had as a born-again, spirit-filled Christian. Ah, worshiping the Lord with other born-again Christians and speaking in tongues and operating in the spiritual gifts and watching the outpouring of the charismatic gifts of the Holy Spirit. Oh my gosh, what a beautiful dream. Oh, both worldviews I have lived in and walked through in terms of spiritual worldviews. And I've walked my ego worldview too, so I've experienced it all. But what I'm saying is that when you're walking the happy dream of returning to God or ascending to a higher dimension or whatever it is that you're doing spiritually, that's that interim period in which the Holy Spirit is like the Divine Mother, gradually awakening you, gradually, so you won't have that sudden shock. Just know that it is also a dream. But enjoy it. It's to be enjoyed. Jesus said that it's very rare that a soul in this particular dimension fully awakens to knowing that they are God. But they come close enough to the gates of heaven that at some point when they move from this dimension, this body, into the next, that awakening occurs to them. And again, within the dream of the world, we dream we die. We don't really die. But we believe that we die. It's a belief system, which Jesus overcame with the resurrection. And we can also resurrect to that at any point. Will we? Well, it doesn't really matter. Some of you maybe will, and some of us maybe won't. But either way, we're going to awaken and find it ultimately that we've never left the heart of God. So, you know, truth is truth. And truth can never, never, never be lost or changed. That's how you can tell when it's true, is that it can never be lost or modified or besmirched in any way. So generally, most people are ego-motivated until some degree of spiritual activation and integration has been attained. And once you attain a certain level of awareness, you have to keep rehearsing it. How do you rehearse it? You're always rehearsing some drama, whether it's the ego, or you're rehearsing your divinity, and you can tell what you're rehearsing by listening to yourself and what you're saying. So the spiritual life really in truth only begins in earnest when we find ways to consciously identify when we're acting out of our ego or false self and making a conscious choice for a loving response. So, you know, catch yourself sometime in mid-rant or mid-irritation, where you're speaking in an ugly way to another emanation of God. Catch yourself when you're doing that, because it feels awful. And choose to stop. Be consciously aware that you're not in the loving. You're in ego. You're enacting falsehood. You're creating karmic bondage for yourself. Stop. And make a conscious choice. Take a deep breath. And choose a loving response. Your choice for the loving is always the God-oriented choice. That's always the choice for truth. I don't care what the circumstances are. I do not care what they are. Always choose the loving. Now, impersonal benevolence would be another description for spirituality. Impersonal because it has no personal payoff or agenda. It is the nature of who you are as a divine spirit to be light, to be love, to be truth, to be wisdom, These are not things that you acquire or learn, but rather what is revealed as we identify and let go of the shrouds of ego. How do we do that? You know, it's very, very simple, really. You pay attention to your reactions. You pay attention to your feelings, your conscience. You pay attention to your motivations. You objectively observe yourself as a witnessing participant of your life. Don't get too down into your life. View it a little bit from a distance. View it from a distance. Witness your behavior. Don't identify with it. Pay attention to whenever you feel a twinge, the slightest twinge, of guilt, fear, irritation, depression. And you will if you've acted ugly to any of God's creation. But whenever you notice yourself blaming, judging, criticizing, notice that you will always feel a dropping of your energy and an unpleasant sensation. The minute you go into ego, into false self mode, all joy and peace depart immediately. So joy and peace are the proof that you are in your divine self. Did you think you were going to be rewarded for being in falsehood and negativity? Hello? So true joy, genuine joy and peace are the proof that you are correctly oriented to life, to God, and spiritually integrated, and functioning through grace. So the divine spirit that you are will never stand in support of falsehood. And the ego is the very manifestation of falsehood. So when you notice the first twinge of unhappiness, stop immediately and consciously course correct. Say, for example, you go into automatic unconsciousness. We often do that when we're chit-chatting on the phone or whatever, especially if we're talking to a person who tends to operate out of ego. How would they manifest? Well, unconsciousness is another way of describing the ego. The ego is unconscious of truth. So it will express sometimes by describing and delivering dialogue about the shortcomings and failures of others. Oh, you know, it starts with trashing another. The minute you start talking about another in a negative way, stop. The instant you notice that, you could say to the person on the phone, oh, I don't want to speak negatively about somebody when they're not present. You could say something like that. Usually I'll say something, whoop, I'm getting into negative ego here, let's stop. Because we tend to come in on the vibration of whatever is presented to us. We must learn not to do that. We must come into agreement only with truth, not with falsehood. We must learn to resonate with truth, not with a person's ego. Sometimes the best thing to do is to not lend fuel to the fire. It's to keep quiet. You know, if a person is really into an ego rant and rage and they're in your face, sometimes the best thing to do is just to say a soft word and to remove yourself, you know. Not to to return word for word. Then you go under the law of karma. Karma is an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And it will buy you a ticket back so that you can do this whole thing all over again in another body and another time and another period of history. But there's the only way to end this cycle is to end the cycle, to wake up and to choose again. So that's the first sign that you're going into negative ego, is when you start criticizing and blaming another. So your friend will be reminded when you do that. And thus you will not create any negative karma by continuing on with an ego-mandated conversation. And you know, Sai Baba said that in the Kali Yuga, when we listen to someone's negative story, we get the same kind of karma as if we were doing the talking ourselves. Moreover, both the speaker and the listener then have the karma of having to go through that experience that they are criticizing the other for. Boy, that's pretty intense, isn't it? So it's best to only see the good and the divine in everyone and everything, and leave all the rest to God. It's not your duty to fix anyone or anything. You can only awaken to your own truth. So it's extremely important if we want to end the world dream of suffering, which right now is acting out in ways that the ego absolutely loves. Oh, the ego loves the media frenzy of this disaster and that disaster and this imperilment and that imperilment. Now everybody's scared about radiation. What is radiation? Well, you could look at it as the radiance of Almighty God and say, bring it on, you know. Let me glow with the divine glory of God instead of being afraid and paranoid and believing that you're going to poison yourself to death. See, that's the ego's lie again. That's the ego. The ego is the intoxicant here. So if you watch that, the ego exacerbates fear, exacerbates the sense of being a victim of whatever, of being powerless in the face of whatever. That's the ego. That's the false self. There's no love in that. So you don't have to buy into that. You catch my drift here? So what do we do? Do we ignore the world? Yes. Nothing that's going on in the world is of any eternal significance whatsoever. You can totally ignore the world. Has your doing ever done anything but create more need to do more doing? Has any ego ever come up with a permanent solution? No. Before, there were just a handful of God-realized people sitting in caves in the various secluded portions of the world that held the truth, the balance of truth, intact in this world. But now, with the outpouring of the Holy Spirit upon all flesh, we are all called to be bearers of light, to awaken. And, of course, not everybody's going to awaken at the same time because, you know, we don't. No more than all the fruit and all the trees ripens instantly at the same time. There'd be too much fruit. So there is a certain purpose for time. And as I've said before, the purpose of time is simply to allow you to remember who you are eternally. And whenever any one of us comes into a point of awakening, an increment of greater light, that is transferred to the entire collective. So you can't do anything that it isn't immediately transmitted to everything and everyone in creation. Instantly. So you're either adding to the corporate ego burden and delaying time, or you are adding your enlightenment into the quotient, which is every time you choose loving. And thus you are, as Jesus said in the Course of Miracles, you are saving time. So no loving thought, word, or deed ever is wasted. Ever, ever, ever. That's why it's so important to have loving thoughts, a loving attitude towards yourself, towards life, towards your family members, towards your people at work, everywhere you are. Your only duty is to import love, to transmit love. And you can do that silently. You don't even have to say a word. Your aura will transmit it. There's nothing so powerful as a soul that is resting in its own divine bliss. Boy, you just sit in the presence of such a person and you begin to awaken. You begin to relax. You begin to heal. Every loving expression sets people free, comforts, heals, and awakens. every single loving thing we say, think, or do. So there is no victimizer out there. There's no enemy. We are not having any of the experiences on our planet because of what anybody has done. Oh, I know, it's the what would you call it? It's the fad today to find some place to dump our blame. Some of the dumping sites that we are now using, what should be the ego, is a place to deposit our sense of guilt and blame. And today, some of the common ones that lightworkers are involved with, well, everybody really, not just the lightworkers, but we tend to blame the government, corrupt politicians, the Illuminati, the New World Orders and agendas, the various conspiracies and conspirators, the international bankers, the global cartels, the drug cartels, the what else do we have? We blame the rich and we blame the poor. And what else? Oh, we blame the ETs and the takeover agendas of the reptilians or the Dracos or the whatever's. These are all popular New Age and pop culture places for the ego to dump its own responsibility. Well, the ego has no responsibility. Its whole thing is to accord blame so that it can thrive and survive. That's how the ego thrives and survives. So the most basic victimizer, I mean, they even blame things on God. The ego even blames everything that's happening in the world on God, or the punishment of God, or the judgment of God, or the vengeance of God, or Satan. You know, it doesn't matter to the ego. Any dumping site will work as long as the ego can survive. And the ego survives always by exacerbating conflict, warfare, hatred, againstness, difference, separation, victim-victimizer scenarios. That's what it does. So you can just know that whenever you hear somebody saying, oh, this is happening because of the chemtrails or the HARP or the whatever, there's always something out there. Each generation thinks of something else. You know, it's the witches, it's the gypsies, it's the this, it's the that, whatever. Know that that's the ego's agenda and there's no truth in it. It is just one of those distractions so that the false self can maintain its existence. And it's a false existence. And the minute you bring in the light of your divinity, your truth, it dissolves like a vapor. Poof, it's gone. So you don't have to do anything with your ego except recognize it and choose the loving. Recognize and choose the loving. It dissolves it. It takes the bite out of it because it's just a false sense of separation. It's the face of fear, false evidence appearing real, but it's false. So be really on your game now. Catch yourself when you misidentify, when you think you're your body, when you think you're your thoughts, when you think you're your mind, your emotions, your karma drama, your role, your dialogue. Wake up within the dream and just remember that you are the love of God. And loving is your only, your highest duty here. So everything that's occurring on today's global arena is simply the rehearsing of ancient unhealed areas that are coming up now that present as the world's problems, which if any one of the participants would choose the loving and awaken within that dynamic, the karmic field would dissolve. And that whole coordinate would be set free through grace. So a good way to pray is to pray that everyone will have a visitation of their own loving into their heart and mind, and that they may awaken to the love that has always been the truth that will set them free. and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And the truth is, you are the love of God. So let's go out chanting, Anai Hu. Take a deep breath. Anai Hu. Anai Hu. God bless you, and God willing, I will be with you next week. I am Commander Lady Athena of the Ashtar Galactic Command. Adonai.